Blog Talk Radio.
What are you doing up here? You been benched yet?
I have some real first in my professional career. I've been benched.
Why is that?
I won't fight.
Well, you could play if you fought.
Whoa, baby!
How's it going, everybody? It is Chris Block here, the Third Man in Radio, here on this Thursday night, May the 19th, 2011, 8 o'clock here in Chicago. It is the Third Man in Radio, thirdmanin.com, and I don't really feel like doing this right now. Superstar, how you doing?
I am well. Yourself?
Doing fantastic.
Good to be back.
Yeah, you've been away. We didn't do a show like it was originally planned on Monday night. But you know, everything's good. I got some things I need to talk to the people of the listeners abroad here a little bit later on. The future of the Third Man in Radio, I think. Nothing to be alarmed about. Nothing to be alarmed about. Superstar, the checks are still coming in the mail.
Can I get one of those?
A little bit later on. Big news today. We could finally do the show. Corey Crawford re-upped with the Blackhawks. They got him. Apparently, they didn't need to wait to the draft to get something done. Somebody knocked on Stan Bowman's door and said, "Hey, you can do this now if you would like, Mr. Stan Bowman." So he did it. He tabled those offers. He didn't wait till the draft, and they got ink on paper today. 3 years. $8 million comes out to about $2.66 million a year on the cap. He gets 3.2 of it up front. What are your thoughts initially before I get into that?
It's something that had to be done, and I think it shows to especially the bandwagon fan that we're not going to go through this again. We're not going to lose our number one goalie over, money. And obviously last year we couldn't have been helped, but it shows that they're willing to kind of step up, pay a guy who obviously they rode, all year. 2.66 mil. I had a couple people ask me already today if that was too much. Figuring the comparison to Antti Niemi coming off the Stanley Cup win, that was too much for Corey Crawford, and I don't think it is. The reason being is, I think if you get the team back and everyone comes healthy, there's no reason. I guess what I'm saying is I can't see Corey Crawford being the reason why you're going to not win the Stanley Cup. I think he will be able to lead you to a cup if the team in front of him. So 2.66, I think, is actually on the bargain side.
I wonder what Corey Crawford would have done if he had had two of those seasons under his belt. I mean, it's amazing. I wrote about it before. People talk about the market. It's kind of depressed for goaltenders. I don't know about that. Antti Niemi gets one full season under his belt and a Stanley Cup, and he gets the contract that he got, which is essentially $3.8 million a year on the cap, something along those lines. Corey Crawford, barely a season, doesn't even win a playoff round, and he gets $2.75 million essentially, almost. So, is it a depressed market for goaltenders? No. What would he get? What would he have gotten if he would have won one, two round? If he knocks off the President's Trophy, Vancouver Canucks, which he almost did. Patrick Sharp gets more wood on that, or whatever synthetic fiber they're using in those sticks that I refuse to buy. If he gets more fiber on that thing, Corey Crawford wins that first round, and then what is he worth? Is he worth another $250,000 a year? Probably. If he wins another round, let's say, in the second round, who would they face? The Red Wings, San Jose. What happens if What happens if they win that round? You know, how much is he worth then? I mean, you're talking about a $3.5 million goaltender. The market is not depressed for goaltenders at all. In fact, the Blackhawks were lucky that they had the guy under contract now, as opposed to him coming up next year. What if he can replicate this thing? What would he be worth then? But it's a moot point. They got him. They got him done. Some interesting comments. You know, Stan Bowman comes out and he says that this is a Stan Bowman quote. I was confident all along that we were going to get Corey signed. Well. I love that quote because, you know, and I do have an email from a dope here, superstar, but, you know, I've matured, I've grown up in life, and I'm finally in my 30s. I think I'm learning to let things go, so I'm not going to humiliate this person. But
come on.
Unless you talk me into it by the end of the show. Yeah, I do have a great email from a dope here. The gist of it is basically this person is saying that, you know, what am I going to write about now? I was wrong again. The Hawks didn't lose Corey Crawford. When? Show me where I wrote or I said on this show that the Blackhawks were in danger of losing Corey Crawford. I noted any time that we talked about it, any time I wrote about it, that they weren't going to lose him. Listening and reading comprehension are skills that are lost in a lot of people. They were never going to lose Corey Crawford. You know, the question was, and the concern on Blackhawks fans, was what was going to be the price? And if you waited too long, as early indications were that they were going to do, obviously, and I do believe, you know, Corey Crawford was quoted today saying, this is the exact quote, it's great to get it done early. This is early, as far as Corey Crawford is concerned. You know, obviously there was a plan in place to hold this thing off and wait, and for whatever reason, it is good. I'm not, you know, I'm saying it's a good thing that they did this now. But the plan originally put the Hawks in danger of getting themselves backed into a corner if something happens in that marketplace that changes, that shifts, that Corey Crawford suddenly sees with his agent that they can get more money, which is the goal of every one of these guys. And as a fan, if you really truly like the player, if you truly are a fan of the player, you should be rooting for him to get as much as he possibly can. You know, in a salary cap era, that's something that I think fans struggle with. They love the player. They love what he does for the team. They'll go out and buy his jersey, but they don't want him to get paid. You know, it's a weird thing that I think a lot of fans struggle with, and it's because of the salary cap and team success and how those two things are intertwined. But you want the player to get as much as he possibly can. It's the best thing for him. And if this thing were to drag out, Corey Crawford could possibly see that, geez, this team is talking like, you know, they're ready to, you know, throw some big money at me. Maybe I should wait, you know, and then the Hawks get back to in a corner where, of course, they're going to match. They have no other option. Today, Stan Bowman said to the media that when they were asking about Alexander Salak, and Stan Bowman basically said that, and he basically guaranteed that Salak is going to be playing in North America this year, but they have no deal. So, I don't know. Something he says he's working on now. They have no deal, but he basically said that he's going to play in North America. So, Stan Bowman put the cart in front of the horse again. But, that, you know, that being said, he put Salak and Alec Richards in the mix to be the backup goaltender behind Corey Crawford. That would be, you know, uh-oh time.
Uh-oh.
You know, I like Alec Richards, but that's a kid that needs 2-3 more years of work and evaluation before you start throwing him in that kind of a mix. That's ridiculous. The Blackhawks are going to go out and sign a backup goaltender. We can only hope. And I think that your tandem in Rockford this year is going to be Hue, just because you want to keep Hue as close as possible this year in case something does happen with the goaltending. I want to talk about something that I just read. A friend of mine wrote that I'm going to take him to task for in just a moment. But I think your tandem this year in Rockford is Richards and Hue. You know, unless some organization comes to you, you know, overseas and says, we'll pay half of Huey's salary, you know, that means something to Rocky too. You know, if you can get that kind of a deal, then yeah, let him go. You know, Rocky's on the hook for, 11 and a quarter million of this Huey contract that he can't, he can't get anything out of. I think that's one reason why Hue would come back here this year. And, you know, again, if something happens to Crawford, if you have other injuries and suddenly $5 million in cap space opens up, you can bring Hue up. And, you know, it's just an insurance policy. It's not something that you're going to look at. But when you're talking about Alec Richards being in the mix to back up Corey Crawford, I mean, that's just unintelligent behavior right there. And, you know, so other things that were said at the press conference today, and I might as well just jump right into this thing here. Stan Bowman says, and this is a quote, "We finally got some stability in goal." End quote. I mean, what's your definition or your interpretation of stability? You know, I guess I'll just, you know, Sam Fells, my buddy over there at the Madhouse Enforcer NBC, wrote something just a little while ago. I was fooling around on that there Twitter, and I saw this, and this is what Sam writes. I'll just read this. Love Sam, but we got to talk about this. This is Sam Fells right here. "Before we get into discussing whether it's too high or not, this is good news for Hawks fans. The Hawks haven't had a genuine number one goalie since Jocelyn Thibeault, and that wasn't all that locked down either. Certainly since the lockout, the Hawks have gone into every season with serious questions about their goaltending." I want to end it right there. "Since every season since the lockout, the Blackhawks have gone in with serious questions about their goaltender. In hindsight, you could probably get away with that remark. You know, Nikolai Habibulin worth every penny of the contract that he signed? Certainly not. But going into the 2005-06 season, did you have a question in goal? No. Going into 2006-07, was the problem Nikolai Habibulin the year before? No. Now, 2007-08, that could be a different story. I mean, there are certainly a lot of people that had their misgivings and were really disgruntled, a lot of fans, a lot of experts at that point that were really down on Nikolai Habibulin. So if you want to say that going into 2007-08, you know, with Patty Laleem as the backup, you want to say it that then, okay, fine. But those first 2 years, I mean, you got misgivings about that. Then you go out in the free agent market the following year, and you sign Cristobal Hue to that big contract. Now, Hue came in, for everything that's been said about Hue, when Hue got here, I mean, I remember having my thoughts as to whether or not, like, wait a minute, this is a lot of money for a guy who went on a good run and was good in part-time and clean-up duty, but this is a lot of money for this guy. But the Blackhawks were swinging for the fences in 09, and he was a part of that, or in 08. And he was a part of that. Fine. But going into that season, you had a number one guy. You just paid him. Now, halfway through the season, you had two great goaltenders, or at least two goaltenders that were playing pretty damn great. Hue and Habibulin, and then Habibulin took the thing over. I don't know that goaltending in 2008-09 was your problem. 2009-10, Hue was bad, and there were a lot of questions about either guy, Hue or Niemi, and, you know, obviously it worked out fine. You won a Stanley Cup. This year, certainly there were questions, but I just don't like that. I don't like that line. Since the lockout, going into seasons, there were not. And then the first one, Superstar, give you a chance here. The Hawks haven't had a genuine number one goalie since Jocelyn Thibeault, Superstar.
I'm gonna go ahead and agree with you. Now, here's the deal. They might not have played like number ones all the way through the year, but to call Nikolai Habibulin not a number one goalie at that point, once again, we're talking that, not now. It is just wrong. I agree that, you know, even when Jocelyn Thibeault was there, it wasn't necessarily a lockdown. Oh, okay, fine. I agree. No, I think that what he might have was saying was, even though there's a number one, as a tandem, there's still questions in the goalie position. You know, like I said, as a tandem, okay, QA, Javi Bullen for that stretch, sure. But other than that, that's what I could see him trying to get across. And as far as the Sam Bowman comment about stability, the only thing I can think about is him saying, once again, we finally got our number one locked down to a multi-year deal where we don't have to worry about it going forward next year. Now, like you mentioned, I think you still need to worry about your backup because there's a lot of questions there. So I think, once again, obviously with this signing, you're still going into this year with question marks in net.
We finally got finally got some stability at goal. That's something that they said when they got QA. That's what they said when they signed Javi Bullen. I mean, what's to say? It's very easily this could happen. I know this is unfathomable to people that are on their Corey Crawford high right now, and I like Corey Crawford a lot. I don't know one way or another if this is going to happen, but this very easily could be. You know, everybody loved Antti Niemi this time last year. And how did Antti Niemi start this year? Not so hot. And now people are, you know, pointing to what's happening to him against the best team in the league. We'll talk about the NHL playoffs here in a little bit. But they're pointing to what the Vancouver Canucks are doing to Niemi, and they're like, oh, I'd rather have Crawford than the Niemi. Hawks are better off. Well, maybe they are, but this thing could turn around on Crawford just as easily. You know, there's different pressures. We talked about this earlier in the year. There's different pressures of being the number one guy. You know, having a whole off season to think about it, coming into camp, you know, being expected to be at a certain level. There's a difference between having to sustain a level that you've already been at and continue to ride that and be that goalie that everyone expects of you, you know. You know, that's a bigger deal. That was one of the criticisms that we had about Joe Quenneville's handling of the goaltending with the Huey-Niemi combo. It's like, if you're going to go to Niemi, if you're going to ride him, if you don't like Huey, just go to Niemi because he needs to be in there night in, night out, and you need to find out what he has when he loses his confidence, and he has to regain it right away because that's what these goalies need to do. Now, this year with Crawford, Joe Quenneville did the right thing. But as we've seen with goalies all over the league, there's only a handful of goalies that can sustain that high of a level that Corey Crawford performed at, especially in the series against Vancouver. But all the way down the stretch, you know, 27, 28 straight games at the end of the season into the playoffs, if he can sustain that, if he can carry that over, if he can duplicate it, then fine. But that's going to be difficult. So 3 years, I think, to me, you can't go over 3 years for a goaltender. I wouldn't go over 3 years for any goaltender anymore. I think the number's a little high, but to get it done, and, you know, this is what the Blackhawks had to do to get it done now, to go a little high. I believe that Corey Crawford wants to be here. You know, it would probably for him He looked at the situation just like you and I and said, well, I'm not going anywhere, and I don't want to create bad blood. And maybe forcing this into a situation where I'm pushing $3.5 million, and that's a lot more pressure too. Let's not create ill will. I mean, look at this quote from Stan Bowman. And you talk about, we talked all year about Nicklas Hjalmarsson. Listen to this quote from Stan Bowman, talking about Corey Crawford. He wants to be a Blackhawk, and that means an awful lot to us. So it meant a lot to Stan Bowman that they cleaned this up in-house. And, you know, I think everything here is good. I think it's interesting that the Blackhawks today were the one to break the story. Typically these things, the agent leaks this thing out. And, you know, it gets out there, but the Blackhawks were the first ones to report it. I think there's something to that. And, I also don't think, you know, I don't think anything was misreported. I think the Blackhawks were going to this thing at the draft, and when that thing got leaked out by the Calgary Sun, and some people picked up on it, mainstream media, for the most part, was asleep. You know, it's a long season. They deserve a vacation. But that thing did get out there, and I think the Blackhawks, somebody there said, wait a minute, we better get this thing done now. And it's a good thing. It's a real good thing. But
and you know what? You mentioned something a little bit ago, talking about the pressures of being expected to be a number one. There's also, and we see it in almost in all sports, you know, a guy, you know, on a contract year goes out and plays amazing and above his head. He gets that new paper. You know, we got to find out what kind of Corey Crawford we're going to get now that he got paid.
Yeah, I just, to me, you got to give him the contract that you have to give him. Would you prefer to give him two? Yeah. But, you know, a lot of people have pointed out to me that, you know, he's an RFA, the Blackhawks should hold all the cards. And that's not, in theory, yes, that's how the CBA was set up, and it's supposed to work that way. But that's in theory, okay? The Blackhawks held all the cards in Kane and Taves, and they went right from entry-level deals to full-fledged NHL star deal. You know, 3 years in the league, that's not the way the system was set up to go, but that's the way this thing has played out. So I don't think you can say, you know, because people, mentioned to me in the email and probably some other places that why are we talking about Corey Crawford making 2.5, 2.75? The Blackhawks hold all the cards. If he gets a 200% raise, that's $1.6 million or 100, you know. Why isn't that fair? Well, That's not how it works. You can argue all day until you're blue in the face that that's how it should work, but that's not how the NHL GMs and owners have operated. So, you know, that's the way it goes. Anything else on Crawford before we move on?
No. Good to get it done, like you said. Good that it's over and done with, and we don't have to worry about it moving forward.
Stan Bowman was also asked, I got a whole list of things here. Stan Bowman was also asked about Marty Turco, I guess to cap off the goaltender thing, and basically the gist is, Stan Bowman said it's clear he still wants to play hockey, Marty Turco, but that Stan Bowman said that Turco and Bowman did not discuss coming back next year, or what Turco wants to do. So it appears as though that's not an option, which is interesting. Again, I mean, I don't know where Marty Turco is going to go and get a starting job or even be able to compete for one. If Dwayne Roloson were to move on or retire, maybe there, maybe Phoenix. I guess Phoenix is probably a good place for Marty Turco to go with any. I don't know. I don't know why. Chicago's a nice place to be. As you said before, Corey Crawford could stumble, could have a bad month. Everybody would be all over his case, calling the Blackhawks morons for signing for 3 years. He's overpaid, this and that. I mean, that could very easily happen. And yeah, I don't know. Let's see. The other thing about, Michael Frolik, people are all concerned about Michael Frolik. the Blackhawks, it appears, Stan Bowman basically indicated that they haven't talked to anybody, that Corey Crawford was their only concern at this point. Sounds like the thing that they're working on now, at least if you believe what Stan Bowman said, was the Alexander Salak thing. He said that they're working on getting him locked up and bringing him to North America. You know, everybody that I saw, you know, the Salak thing didn't get first run story treatment from any of the writers. But everybody used the terminology on Twitter, you know, in their little, you know, notes here, that Stan Bowman said that Alexander Salak would play somewhere in North America next year. I don't know if he meant, follow-up there, so I don't know if he meant somewhere as in Rockford or Chicago. I don't know. Just like I would say with Ben Smith and Marcus Kruger, I'll say the same thing for Alexander Salak. I want him. These are the Chicago Blackhawks. I want those three. If they're good enough to be on the Blackhawks next year, fine, great. But I want them to earn spots. And I don't want them handed anything. I do believe, but if I was also in the position, I would go out and sign a backup goaltender. I'm not entrusting Alexander Salak for nothing. You know, I heard a rumor a little while back that he was injured. I guess he had a shoulder injury or some sort of arm injury. I'd be concerned about that. But even if he was 100% healthy, I'd still bring in a backup, and I'd approach it that way. Make him earn it. You know, Corey Crawford had to sit in the minors for how long to wait for his opportunity? Antti Niemi came over, and he sat in the minors for a year. And in part, that was because, Corey Crawford was the guy that I think they thought was going to come up and take that job when the Hawks signed Cristobal Huey. They tried to get rid of Hobby Bullen through trade and sent him to Russia. It didn't work out. He got stuck on the team, if you remember, if you were a fan back then listening now. Nikolai Agulin was banned from training camp. And then it got down to the last week of training camp. They had to bring him back because they couldn't get rid of him. That job was supposed to be, you know, a lot has been made of Corey Crawford not making the Blackhawks until he's, you know, 26 years old. That was his spot that he lost because the Blackhawks had planned to and weren't able to get rid of Nikolai Abibulin. That was the beginning of, perceived cap mismanagement, whether you perceive it to be or whether it's fact, in that the Blackhawks had, you know, they had $12 million locked up on their cap in goaltending. It was not good. Salak, I guess, you know, if you go by what was put out there today, is order of business number two, and then they'll worry about Frolik, Campoli, and then I would imagine to a lot lesser degree Stahlberg and that lot. You watching the NHL playoffs at all, Superstar?
I am. Not you know what, I know, not as much as I probably should, but yeah, I am.
I watched last night's, or game two of San Jose and Vancouver. I watched the CBC feed, and my God, you'd think, Ben Eager isn't, he's no rocket scientist. But you'd think that the entire reason why the San Jose Sharks lost Game 2 was due to Ben Eager. Ben Eager let in all the goals. Ben Eager, he did everything wrong. Everything that happened in that third period, every time Vancouver scored, there was a shot of Ben Eager. The whole thing at the end, did you see the thing at the end where Vancouver went at Eager after the final horn? Eager was just standing there. I'm sure they were yapping, but it was Max LaPerriere and one of the other guys went after Eager. He was just standing there. He didn't start anything. The CBC guys are going crazy, like, you got to get this guy out of the game. How could he do this? And then the shots up to Coley Campbell and Chris King, who were there in Vancouver last night, and they're looking all stern, and the CBC crew's talking about what's going to happen to Ben Eager. It's like ridiculous. The hit, first of all, the hit on Daniel Sedin is the exact thing that drives me nuts now about players. It's like, was that, Ben Eager's hit on Daniel Sedin, was that a bad hit? If you're really trying to convince yourself it was, I'm sure you can think that and maybe even make a good argument that it is. And I would think that if I was Ben Eager, I would assume that watching countless hours of hockey games and the tape leading up to the series, I would assume that Daniel Sedin is going to do that pirouette as he's cycling that puck down low, down the wall, because I've seen him do it millions of times. But that's a player putting himself in a bad position. You know, as a player, when you're going to do that, you know, like Daniel Sedin did, you know that, especially in the playoffs, that there's going to be a player within 10 feet of you that is going to, his responsibility at that point is going to be to finish his check. And if you are going to intentionally put yourself in a vulnerable position, I have no sympathy for you. You know, should Eager have come at him as hard as he did? Should he maybe have let up? I don't know. That's a bang-bang play. If I'm Eager, I'm anticipating he's going to do that because Sedin's always do that. I always used to get on, one of the things that drove me nuts about James Wisniewski, he'd do that too. He'd see the guy coming, he'd be behind the goal line, he'd see the guy coming, and then he'd turn his back to him and shuffle the puck up the boards, and then he'd get hit from behind, he'd fall down, he'd get up, and he'd flail his arms in the air and scream at the referee why there was no call. Well, the reason why there's no call, dumb fuck, is because you're an idiot, and you put yourself in a position to get railroaded from behind. When all you had to do was square your shoulders to the oncoming contact, brace yourself, take the contact, and keep going. When you turn your back to a check that is oncoming, that you know is coming, you deserve everything you get. Now, as far as Ben Eager fighting Patty Marleau dropped his gloves first. Should Ben Eager challenge Patty Marleau to a fight? Well, no. I mean, that's part of his job, is to get under Patty Marleau's skin. But Patty Marleau dropped his gloves first, as clear as day on the replay. You know, I mean, Ben Eager took dumb penalties, and they cost San Jose, and yeah, he's an idiot. But, God, if you would have seen this, and I'm not trying to stick up for Ben Eager. This is more of a broadcast outlet that has completely up their ass. You know, it's like they got on something and they just wouldn't let up, and it was just ridiculous. Did you see? And the other big story from last night's game, Superstar. I don't know if you saw this, but excuse me, coffee break. apparently, the internet has never seen boobies before. Did you see this?
That was everywhere today.
The internet, get this, right, Superstar?
I can confirm the internet has seen boobies.
The internet is all about boobies. Like, why did this infiltrate my hockey coverage today? a bunch of dorks that have never seen boobies before, all up in a, oh, my God. It wasn't, you know. And if you go to the Vancouver Sun, there's actually what's creepy about it. I wouldn't even say creepy. It's just what's interesting about it is there's an AP photo. It's actually a Getty Image photo, but of the girl as she's lifting up her shirt, there's a Getty Image. The actual guy's name is Rich Lom. If you go to Vancouver Sun .sports, the title of the thing, it's from Frank Appleyard. Overeager Canucks fan bears breast live on CBC broadcast. And you get a zoomed-in still photo of just the girl, not the girl in Eager, just as she's about to let her boobs out. And this was posted on the Vancouver. I don't know. If you're gonna make a big deal about, oh, this is unnecessary behavior at a hockey game, which it is, I mean, you can't just go get naked at a hockey game, can you, Superstar?
Yeah, I played in the United States a few times this year, but yeah, I think there's a rule against that. You know what, speaking cut you off on the picture, I thought it was hilarious. I saw it on the Yahoo Sports page today, whatever Puck Daddy or whatever the Yahoo Sports hockey page is called now. And the picture that they had was both Keeger and the girl as her shirt was up, and covering her nipples was the little lumberjack guy that Roberto Luongo has on his mask on either nipple. So I thought that was pretty funny.
All right, now that's all I want to talk about that. I didn't. She was. You didn't really get a good shot of her. Like in the Vancouver Sun thing, which I think I just got rid of. She looks kind of cute. I don't know. Did you ever see the one? I guess the famous one with the Florida Panthers. It was either before the game or during intermission. The guy who's got the in-arena cam is surfing the crowd, and this girl like lifts up her shirt, and she's got these big implants, and the arena guy zooms in on her and holds for like a whole 20 seconds, and then she like puts him away, so to speak, and he zooms out and acts like, oh my God, you know.
No, I didn't see that one, but. You know what, God bless, you know, they ban the green men, and you see what happens. You ban the green men from touching the penalty box and said you get boobies. And is there a confirmation that she was one of the Vancouver hussy that was in the limo with Versteeg and Kane and Madden?
No, that would have been an upgrade. Kaner would have got good points if that she would have been in the limo. All right, I don't know if I want to. We'll save the show stuff for a little while. This might be we might be off for a couple of weeks. Let me just say that. I could be wrong. I might be lying to you right now. We'll be back on Monday night. As of right now, I think this is going to be our last show for a couple of weeks. But that could change. If you do happen to be listening to us live and you want to call in, you got questions, you want to talk about Crawford or anything else, what else is going to go on in the summer, this would be your chance. I'm going to put it out there.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to put it out there. The number to call in, 347-857-3781, 347-857-3781, if you want to jump on. I'm looking at the switchboard, so if you call, I'll probably pick you up.
Or if you're in a bar at 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
You'll also pick them up.
Words that have been spoken too many times. big news this week, Dick Ebersol has left NBC. Now, this is interesting because Dick Ebersol negotiates this deal with the National Hockey League, and now he's gone. Now, this is a 10-year deal. Anybody who knows anything about anything regarding television is that contracts aren't necessarily worth the paper that they're written on. If somebody comes in to NBC and decides they don't like hockey, well, you got a problem. I mean, I don't know the exact language of the contract, obviously, but these things are breakable. You know, there could be out clauses. I'm sure there are out clauses all over the place on that contract. So if you get a new president that comes in and just sees hockey as something that is a holdover until they get you know maybe they get baseball or NBA or whatever whatever they would look to do, that could be a problem. So Dick Ebersol leaves NBC. Keep that in mind if you're one to think about the NHL contract. Television contract, anyway. Here's the other thing that I wanted to talk about. Big news. A guy that we talked about all year long as far as the Blackhawks potentially acquiring via trade, and also he was set to hit the unrestricted free agency market on July 1st. Well, that is no more. Calgary Flames winger Curtis Glencross, 4 years, $10.2 million, comes out to a little over $2.5 million a year. For a 24-goal score, 79 games, 24 goals, 43 points, a plus six, four game winners, two shorties, three power play, and 105 hits. A little low considering the type of game he plays, but that's good news for Blackhawks fans, I think. You know, you got a guy who was going to be a UFA, gets 4 years at $2.5 million. That should bring the number down for guys like Brooks Leitch, who a lot of people have talked about, Thomas Fleischman, Colorado Avalanche, was health concerns, but you know, he should be all right. And also, you know, a guy that we talked about before this season even began, when we were talking about guys the Blackhawks could get on the cheap, that could help the team, could play, you know, bring a little bit of grit to your team, playing up and down northwest or north-south game on your team. And Sean Bergenheim, who's having a terrific, you know, had a good season, a strong finish, and now a terrific playoff. His value's gone up and up and up and up. This Glenn Cross deal would seem to be to put a cap on his earnings, which is a good deal for the Blackhawks, because whether they re-sign Troy Brouwer or not, they've got to bring in somebody else. That grit, that energy from a standpoint of what their need is, isn't coming from within the organization. So it doesn't appear, unless Kyle Beach has a renaissance over the summer, that's not going to happen. So it's actually good news for the Blackhawks. Let's talk about these restricted free agents here. Now that Corey Crawford's all locked up, I know that I've seen some really stupid stuff in the last couple of weeks. I just by listening to Stan Bowman, I would think that his next order of business is going to be Chris Campoli. Just you know, basing it entirely on how much he loves Chris Campoli. So I'm assuming that's the next order of business, which is fine. I mean, again, I like Chris Campoli as long as he's on my third pair. Then your next order of business, probably after that, I would think, would be Troy Brouwer. But again, gauging by Stan Bowman's comments after the season was over, it's probably going to be Michael Frolik. Here's the deal. Michael Frolik's qualifying offer is $803,000. I tell Michael Frolik to take the $803,000, and that's it. Blackhawks don't have that much room to operate under this salary cap, and I'm not even going to play around. He's not arbitration eligible. He's not a good enough player to get a qualifying offer. And if he gets a qualifying offer, it's not going to be that much. And if it is, take the draft pick and say c'est la vie. I'll play that game with Michael Frolik all day long, just because, you know, he had a good playoff, but, you know, is he that good of a player that you're going to just throw money at right now? No, you don't do that. I say take that, you know, give him that qualifying offer, tell him take it or leave it. Troy Brouwer, of course, under terms of the CBA, they don't need, and all this is up at thethirdmanin.com from the post of last week, but we'll just go over this. Troy Brouwer's qualifying offer is equivalent to his salary of last season, so it's a little over $1 million. I say this to Troy Brouwer. I'll pull up my salary chart here. Troy Brouwer is going to be, he turns 26 this summer. So if he signs a one-year deal, if the CBA rolls over, which I think is what's going to happen next summer, I don't think that the NHL and the NHLPA are going to come to an agreement on anything. There's an existing clause in the CBA that gives them the ability. It doesn't even give them the ability. It's basically right there for you. If there is no agreement by September 15, 2012, then the thing just rolls over. So it would take, you know, somebody going to court essentially to lock the other or strike out. So I think what you're going to have, there's not going to be a work stoppage. I think that the current CBA will roll over, and I think that probably around Christmas 2012, right around that time is when they'll finally get all their ducks in a row, hammer a new CBA out. So I'm thinking, at least at this point, or anticipating, that the current CBA will be around for at least another year. So you're talking about Troy Brouwer turning 26 next summer, 27 the following summer. I say to Troy Brouwer, I say this. I go, I'm not paying you more than $1.5 million a year. And I know people are going to say that's too high. But that's kind of ridiculous for, you know, for what Troy Brouwer can do. I'd say, you know, you want to say $1.4 million, you want, you know, $1.4 million, $1.5 million, that's it. You want it for 1 year or you want it for 2 years, but the basic gist of it is I would lean towards 1 year. I'd say I'm giving you $1.5 million for this year, and then you could take me to arbitration next year. Play for your contract. In fact, I'd rather have that. I'd rather have Troy Brower playing for his contract this year, because I can't replace Troy Brower for more than $1.5 million. This is a case where I have the RFA. He's not going anywhere. I mean, if somebody wants to throw an offer sheet at Troy Brower, I like Troy Brower. I think he could be in line for a breakthrough season. In fact, that's the way I'm leaning as of today. You know, I go back and forth on Troy Brower, but he could have a breakthrough season, or he may not. But I'm not willing to gamble on giving him 2 years or giving him a big contract. I'd rather say, here's $1.5 million, play for your contract, take me to arbitration next year. I don't care. I need a great year out of Troy Brower this year, and then hopefully in 2012, 2013, Kyle Beach will be ready, Philip Paradis will be ready, or I can go out in the market and get somebody else. Or Brian Bickle will emerge and become what I need him to be all year long. One of those two things. But that's what I do. I work out a one-year deal with Brower, 1.5, and just say be done with it. That's my preferred thing with Brower. Kopechki's gone. Turco's gone. You want to replace those guys for under $1 million apiece. Whether Kopechki is replaced with Ben Smith or not. You know, I mean, Sam Bowman has Marcus Kruger filled in on a roster spot, but he's also got John Scott filled in on a roster spot. You know, Frolik, like I said, give him his qualifying offer and dare somebody to come in and give him an offer sheet. I can replace Michael Frolik. You know, yeah, does he look like a nice player, but did he do it? You know, did he do it all year? What's his shot like? Here's the problem with Michael Frolik. I was having this discussion with somebody the other day. He cannot play on your top two lines. People talk about the growth or what Michael – he can't play on your top two lines because his shot selection is atrocious. And that's not going to get any better, it doesn't look like. He is what he is. He's going to take shots away from better scorers. If he's on Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane's line, he's taking shots away from those players. What did we see from Frolik? We even saw it in the playoffs. He takes dumb shots that don't result in rebounds, which means no second-chance opportunities for whoever happens to be driving towards the net, whether it's Toews, Brower, Ben Smith, Hossa, whoever. He's got shots with no second-chance opportunities, and he's got shots at bad angles. When his better, you know, we saw it consistently all the time, where his better option was to hold and wait for Marian Hossa to come into the zone, pass it across, get somebody to go down to block a shot, pass it across to whoever happened to be on his right or his left side in whatever case, and he never did it. He cannot play on your first or your second line. So you cannot overpay him to play on your third line, which is where he has to play. Can he be a nice contributor to your third line? Sure. Because, you know, if he is, it's defense first, and whatever offense you get out of him is gravy. If he can be that player, he's intelligent enough to know his responsibilities. He works hard. You like him to be a little bit stronger. He's got a stick on the ice. He seems to be aware of where he is in the defensive zone. All those things are good. I'm not trusting him to be a center ever. I can't do it. He didn't want to play center. He hadn't played center in 7 years. You're trying to win a Stanley Cup. You can't hedge your bets on guesswork. He's a third liner and a third liner only. So you don't say, well, we're scared that somebody's going to come in and give him an offer sheet, or we're scared that if we only give him 1 year, we'll lose him next. No, I don't care. It's 1 year, add his qualifying offer, and then earn a bigger contract, and then I'll deal with it later. Because all he is a third liner, and you can replace third liners. In a year from now, maybe Igor Makarov is ready to be that player that Michael Frolik. You don't overpay for a third liner, and that's all that Michael Frolik is. And if he's bad, he's going to be on your fourth line before you know it. You don't overpay Michael Frolik, or you'll be sorry. Would you keep Victor Stahlberg superstar?
No. I wanted him to be good. I wanted him to be better. I think he did get better as the year went on. I think he got more physical, and that was obviously the big knock on him. I don't keep him. I'd have to really look at what's out there on the market, but I'm sure you could find a suitable replacement for him that wouldn't cost so much.
We're going to go over to the Rockford guys in a minute because I got an email cleaning up the emails that we didn't get to a week ago. Hold on. The emails that we didn't get to a week ago, someone was asking you to go over all the Rockford guys kind of in brief. I'll try to be – we'll work on my brevity this week. We'll see if I could do that. I'm not typically good on as far as brevity goes. But you talk about guys that you can replace Victor Stahlberg with. Here's the thing on Stahlberg. You know, they called him the Swedish Rocket. You remember that superstar when he came out of Vermont? They call him the Swedish Rocket. And, of course, he's not that. But he's fast as hell. He's got size. No, he doesn't use it. But my contention is if I can get Victor Stahlberg at a deal, like his qualifying offer is $735, you know, I don't know. If he takes that, I'm more than willing to keep him on my fourth line if he embraces that role. Because if I can have a bump line, if I can send out my bump line, you know, your fourth line that has one of the faster players in the league in Victor Stahlberg when he gets his legs moving, who has a little bit of skill that if all hell breaks loose up top, you know, and I lose Kane and Hossa for 3 weeks. While I, you know, day to day, game in, game out, do I trust Victor Stahlberg to contribute offensively? No. But he has the kind of skill to fill that gap for a couple of weeks, four or five games, until you get those players back. So he's valuable in that sense, too. So if you're talking about, you know, $850,000 or whatever, and I'm sure the Blackhawks will say, oh, we'll give you 1 year and $850,000. He's better than anybody else they have in the system to put in that spot, and he's probably better than anybody you'll go out in free agency and get. I know a lot of people aren't high on Victor Stahlberg. I've never been high on Victor Stahlberg. But in a fourth-line role with a guy that has enough intangibles that he's valuable to you in more than that fourth-line role, I'm willing to take him back. But it's got to be at the right price, and he has to buy into being a fourth-line player that knows that as long as he's consistent and he plays well and he contributes on that fourth line in the role that the coach asks him to contribute in, he'll get opportunities when they become available up on, you know, up on the top line. If he's willing to buy into that, if he's willing to buy into, get this, right, teamwork, then I'm willing to bring him back. You know, will he be my favorite Blackhawk to watch? Probably not. But again, that speed, that kind of speed on a fourth line, that's what the Blackhawks, how did the Blackhawks win a Stanley Cup? They won a Stanley Cup, depth on defense, you know, very good goaltending, at least from what they got from Niemi, very good goaltending, and just overwhelming depth up front. Now, are they going to be able to match that kind of depth ever again? Probably not. So what you want to have, how you want to break your team down, you obviously want to have two scoring lines. You've got to have secondary scoring. Your third line, if Dave Boland is the catalyst of your third line, that you got a little bit of scoring and a little bit of banging, and you can shut other teams, you know, front lines down, then obviously you're ahead of the game. You have two scoring lines and you got the Dave Boland line. How do I make my fourth line valuable? How do I win that matchup every game? And that's key, especially in the regular season. And, you know, once the playoffs come around, 10 to 15 shifts those guys get a game, if they even get 15 shifts, become very important. And they're always going to be matched up against other teams' fourth lines, and in the rare opportunity or rare case that they're out there stuck against the Sedins or Zetterberg, Datsyuk, Joe Thornton, guys like that, you know, will, you know, you have that kind of speed. And if Ben Smith's on that fourth line, you have an intelligent young player who, you know, that should never be the problem with Ben Smith. If anything, the problem with Ben Smith won't be his hockey intelligence. You know, right now it's foot speed and hands that are going to be the question marks about his game. People ask, UFA defensemen that, you know, unless the Blackhawks trade Hjalmarsson, they're not going to have much to work with. If you go by right now with Corey Crawford's new deal thrown on there, and I'll just run it down. We've got the backup goalie slot at $800,000. Okay, whoever it ends up being, we'll just call it $800,000. Stay with me here. The Thomas Kopechky spot, $900,000. Troy Brouwer, $1.5 million. We're keeping Nick Leddy on the team, so I don't know. I have two numbers here, but you got Nick Leddy on the team still. Michael Frolik at his qualifying offer. Victor Stahlberg, $735,000. You know, you've got a depth defenseman that you're going to bring in. You know, call it Brent Sopel in $750,000. That's not what I would do, but Jake Dahl, gosh, you know, one of the things that puzzled me, you know, the Huntington's aside, I don't know if Jake Dahl has a place on this team next year, but the one thing that they're already planning a Jake Dahl night next year. Did you know this superstar?
I did not.
Yeah. They're already planning a Jake Dahl night for next year. Not like a Jake Dahl Heritage night, but but yeah, there's like a Jake Dahl benefit and everything for Huntington's disease next year. So, but regardless, the Jake Dahl slot, you know.
Well, that'll be good when Phoenix comes in.
Yeah, Jake Dahl, $605,000. Brian Bickell at his 541. John Scott at his the cap numbers at 512. Kruger at 735. We're leaving Chris Campoli at 1.4. We know that'll go up. And then Ben Smith at 812,000. That all tallies up. If the cap is 62.3, that all tallies up to the Blackhawks having $1 million left in cap space. Now, where does that, you know, that $1 million could go away to, you know, a better backup goalie, you know, and a better winger. You know, whether you're putting him in Stahlberg or Kopechky spot, a little bit more pricey winger, whether you know, you're looking at Maxime Talbot or somebody, an increase to Chris Campoli. So that's your team, folks, you know. So people say, why do you need to trade Nicholas Hjalmarsson? I wouldn't do it myself. You know, I mean, there's guys I'd rather trade than Nicholas Hjalmarsson. But, you know, who are you going to trade and get value in return for? Because that's the deal. I just don't see it. But, yeah, they're right up against it. Just with those guys basically, or those slots, forget about the players, those slots basically coming back at the existing player's qualifying number, you know, 800, 750,000, all those spots, a Chris Campoli raise, and call it a Troy Brouwer raise or a new Troy Brouwer, the Blackhawks basically have $1 million in cap space to work with. And that's if, which is what is expected, is that the NHLPA takes their 5% escalator. I don't know why they wouldn't, so I would expect that they would. But if they don't, let's just do some quick math here. You think I'd be able to do quick math? If they don't, which I can't. If they don't, then the Hawks are basically $1.9 million under, over the cap. So they're pretty tight up against it. So I don't know, UFA defenseman, Jani Pitkinen, not even an option because he doesn't do what the Hawks need him to do. Kevin Bieksa, too much. Andy Green, possibility. God save us. Ian White, we talked about Brent Sopel, Ed Jovanovsky, and a guy that we talked about all year long, Steve Montador. In the category of what would be more likely, Brent Sopel, Randy Jones, we talked about, playing right now for Tampa. Ken Huskins, who will be a UFA. He's on San Jose right now, which I don't think Ken Huskins fits into what they do, but that's a name. Jim Vandermeer, probably not, but these are the guys we're talking about. Paul Maher. I think those are, and you're looking at, especially if you don't get rid of Jalmerson, those are the names you're looking at. The Hawks just won't have money to bring in anybody else. All right, let's do Rockford. You got anything percolating on the mind there, Superstar?
No, I mean, you brought up Kevin Bieksa, and you know, from what I've seen in the playoffs, every time I turn on, he's earning himself some more paper. He's having an amazing playoff run.
Yeah, he's good. My love for Kevin Bieksa knows no bounds.
And I know this.
Oh, boy. All right, a little bit of technical difficulty there. All right, so wanted to talk about, people ask me about this all the time. We're going to run through the Rockford guys here and their chances and what the state of each guy is. We're going to do this in short form. I didn't get to this last show. Let's go. I should just do it here. All right. Kind of going alphabetical order. Kyle Beach. Like I said before, unless he goes through a complete transformation, I just don't see it. Not next year. He needs a full year. And, you know, hopefully come this time, you know, summer of 2012, you'll be talking about Kyle Beach and figuring him into the following season's roster. I think that if he has a great season, there's obviously going to be in Rockford and the Blackhawks organization next year. If he's still around, and if he has a great season, let's say he gets off to two or three great months, and you know, right off the bat, there is going to be, and not just from fans, but I think within the organization, there's going to be a push to get him up while he's going well. Because, you know, and this is a concern about, I think, about Kyle overall as a prospect and a player, is that if he were to get going really good in Rockford, you know, he's a guy who this year, you know, forget about if he actually were rounding out and doing all the things that you expect or you hope that Kyle Beach can be. This year, he was a guy who was, you know, struggling with the fact that he didn't get called up. You know, I mean, you know, go back to, you know, all my reports on Rockford and status of guys' development, and Kyle Beach. I mean, this year, he was a guy who was discouraged that he wasn't getting an opportunity to be called up. So can you just imagine if he were to start out hot next year and be stuck in Rockford because of the cap? I think that there's a concern that mentally, that once he gets going, whether he's ready or not, that they have to bring him up. So, you know, again, we just talked about that cap space. It's almost like you have to leave yourself $1 million, not just so you can keep Jeremy Morin and Nick Leddy up to practice with the team on off days, but also, you know, in case you need to, you know, a guy like Kyle Beach or, you know, if Ben Smith doesn't start out with the team out of training camp. So you can bring those guys up when somebody gets injured and not have to worry about, you know, about playing with the cap. So I'd look for that. I think mentally, whatever the cap ends up being, I think you shave $1 million off of that and then play with that number if you're a Blackhawk fan going on Cap Geek and doing all that fun stuff, because, you know, because of what I just said, I think that's really the number that they're looking at, because they need to leave themselves that leeway. You know, again, you can make the argument, and I wouldn't disagree with you, that if a prospect is that, you know, wilty in the head, that maybe he's not worth it. But, you know, that's the way it is. Brandon Bolig, yeah, he's terrible. Evan Brophy, probably gone. But you never know. I would say that, you know, if the Blackhawks are out there looking for free agent help, minor league free agent help in the minors for next season, and Evan Brophy doesn't have a deal and they can't find anybody, maybe they go back to Evan Brophy. But you're not going to see a qualifying offer. You're not going to see them jumping to re-sign him. I think that's one of the things where, you know, yeah, again, he had 4 years to impress, separate himself in some way. It was a rocky start for him. He had a lot of transitioning to do, but it's just overall, it's just a disappointing results on Evan Brophy so far. Jonathan Carlson, who was in Rockford this year and then left, he defected back to Sweden. Haven't heard anything about whether he's coming back or not, but he's under contract for next year, so he's on the 50-man. Brian Connolly, I think one thing that we didn't talk about, Ivan Vishnevsky signed with the KHL. You know, I should bring this up, you know, Superstar, while I'm trying to do this. Oh, we got, hold on here, Superstar. Is that, I should probably tell you what I'm looking for. So, Ivan Vishnevsky signs a contract with the KHL this week, right? And it's basically one of the teams in the Moscow metropolitan area, Atlant. But it's I don't know. I think it's like 20 or 30 miles outside of downtown Moscow. I could be wrong. But in the press release, and if I ever find it, because I'm looking for it now, in the press release on the KHL website, it basically and the computer sucks right now, and it's really not that important. But oh, here we go. I'll eventually get it out. In the press release, Superstar, it basically said that the reason why, and again, this was the KHL website. It said basically the reason why Ivan Vishnevsky didn't get a shot was because he was Russian. No. I'm gonna keep talking, but I'm gonna find it because I was. You know, again, it's the English translation, which is automated on their site. So we're not even talking about being Google or anything. See, now I'm.
Now this isn't. Now I'm this isn't. You know, 1989.
Oh, let's see. Yeah, I forget. I gotta go here, and Jesus Christ. All right. Anyway, while that's loading, let's do the next player. Brian Connolly. I mean, bring him back as insurance. I don't have a problem with it. I just don't see him. If everybody's healthy on the Blackhawks roster, I don't see him ever getting a chance. So I don't. For offensive purposes, especially if Vishnevsky is gone now, which definitely is. You know, I mean, he could sign with the KHL and then. You know, he could change his mind, but that would create a shitstorm with the IIHF, and I just he's gone. But yeah, I would keep Brian Connolly around, but I just don't see him ever making it to the Hawks. Joe Labin, we'll see. He looked good. I'll say that. I saw one game from Joe Labin down. I think he played two. I saw one of them, and not bad. You know, but we'll see. Notre Dame defenseman. Got some decent size on him. Can move the puck a little bit. Simone Denny-Pepin. I don't know if he'll ever be able to skate at a pro level, but we'll see. Chris DiDomenico. I got a problem. I'll say this. I got a problem with a guy. You know, we haven't seen enough of Chris DiDomenico yet to say yay or nay, but I got a problem with a kid who is a good prospect, who's got good skill, who shows up to a professional camp and not in professional professional condition. It goes back to what we talked about, why Ben Smith had leapfrogged other prospects and why it was him before Kyle Beach and other guys, Rob Klinkhammer. And not to, you know, say Rob Klinkhammer's not a, you know, not a guy who's in shape or anything. He is, but, you know, the off-ice worth ethic is just as important as the on-ice in the Blackhawks' eyes. So if you're Christy Domenico and you show up, you know, a scrawny little kid to a professional hockey camp, I mean, I have no sympathy for you. So, I don't know. I'm sour on Dean Domenico as a prospect, and I know they are too. Exelby's probably gone. Klinkhammer, I think Klinkhammer will get a contract, and he'll get a shot to make the team. You know, if not, he's a first, second-line player in Rockford, and they need those guys. They're going to be a young team again. Byron Fryce doesn't have a contract yet, but I think the expectation is that he's going to be in Rockford, so I'll look forward to that. I haven't seen him play, so I can't really say. Sean Lalonde, got to work him around into God damn, what is wrong with this computer? Sean Lalonde just needs more time. You know, you've got plenty of time on him. You know, Nick Leddy, I mean, I'd have Nick Leddy in the minors next year to start anyway. But that's not going to happen. So, you know, Nick Leddy has leapfrogged these other guys, and you already have too many of, you know, of one kind of guy there as it is. So either Sean Lalonde becomes trade bait, which I say is less likely, but it could happen, depending on if there's an offer out there or what have you. Or he just has one or two more years to get it all together. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, defensemen sometimes take longer to develop, and if they're going to learn, you want them to learn in the AHL, unless their name is Nick Leddy, I guess. Igor Makarov, and here's the deal. And this is what I've been consistent with this on Jeremy Morin, on Nick Leddy, on Ben Smith, and I'm going to say this on Igor Makarov too. Igor Makarov played very well down the stretch for the Rockford IceHawks. You know, I talked about Brophy earlier. I'm going to contradict myself here. But the best line down the stretch, or at least the catalyst for Rockford's sort of late-season resurgence, was a line that was Evan Brophy in the middle, Kyle Hagel on the left side, and Igor Makarov on the right. It was just the right mix of a veteran who, you know, knew where to be on the ice in the middle, which is, that's what you need a center to be. You know, he covered a lot of ice. He was responsible. He's, you know, Evan Brophy's not dynamic or anything, but he's a solid center iceman at the AHL level. Kyle Hagel, who was just the energy guy, you know, grunting things out on the boards, getting to the front of the net. He was just, you know, it was the right mix. And then Igor Makarov on that line became the skill guy, and it was at that point that he really came into his own. However, before I bring any of these guys up, if you were asking me, I want to see them dominate at the AHL level. It's the problem that, you know, I bring this up when I talk about Nick Leddy. It's the issue that I had at the time with Cam Barker, and we see where Cam Barker's career has gone. Cam Barker was brought up to the NHL by Dale Talon before he was ready, because people were starting to get restless on, okay, we've heard about Cam Barker. Where's Cam Barker? So the second he put two good weeks together, they brought up Cam Barker. Was Cam Barker ready? No. Was he dominating AHL games? No. Was he lugging the puck and the principal defenseman on the Rockford IceHogs before he was called up to the Blackhawks? No. But because there was this enthusiasm, or whatever you want to call it, to get Cam Barker to the NHL, to get a return on your investment, to see what you had in him, he fell flat on his face. And he's never recovered from that. Maybe Cam Barker was never going to be a great NHL defenseman, or maybe he never will be, but there were mistakes made with Cam Barker. Just like I'm apprehensive to say that Nick Leddy, you can just let him go and be an NHL player right now, because, you know, I like Nick Leddy as a player, but it's not about what Nick Leddy is today. It's about what Nick Leddy can be ultimately. And I want Nick Leddy to be, if he's going to be Duncan Keith, if he's going to be Brian Campbell, if he's going to be Phil Housley, or if he's going to come even close to any of those, I want to see him round out his game. I want him to be given every opportunity to succeed, and I just haven't seen it yet. Is he hanging in there at the NHL level? Sure, but a lot of guys can hang in at the NHL level. You know, you want to see him move forward and above, you know, to the top of the pack, and I don't know. So that's the same. It's the same thing with Igor Makarov. Yes, he turned it on towards the end of the season. He looked a lot better, but I want to see him come back, go back to Rockford, and be consistent and show that he wants to be an NHL player, not that he deserves it or he put his time in and now he should be an NHL player. I don't think that there's a guy on Rockford that should be on the Blackhawks on opening night, maybe aside from Ben Smith. I don't care what they do in training camp. I would send them back and say, show me that you want it. Makarov, Morin, all of these guys. Show me that you want it. Play two-way hockey down there, play in all kinds of situations, score, perform consistently, and when you show me you can do that, then I'll bring you up. The Blackhawks have that luxury, and they need to use it. Quickly here, let's run through some more. I don't think I ever got... I think the KHL site's down. So I won't be able to read that quote to you, Superstar. But basically it said, and I'm paraphrasing, that Ivan Vishnevsky had no chance with the Chicago, in the translation as Indians, the Chicago Indians. So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, is this really the quote or is it not? He had no chance with the Chicago Indians because of his Russian descent.
An interesting comment in 2011.
All right. Jeremy Morin. You know, hey, he was really, before he went to the World Junior Championships in December, I mean, he was starting to light it up in Rockford. I mean, he was really starting to look like, and obviously people were excited about him at the NHL level, but again, it's about being consistent, having success at the minor league level, so you can bring that with you to the professional level. You know, he was really starting to turn the corner. Every time he touched the puck, he was just dynamite. You could see the skill was you know, his confidence was at all-time high. Goes to the World Junior Championship, he gets hurt. Comes back from the World Junior Championship, plays two games, gets a concussion, never plays again. You know, there were parts about Morin's game that were in question in December. You know, you take 4 months out of his game, 4 months of playing out of his game. You know, I can't pencil him into the NHL roster. Could he come into camp and look great again? Sure, but defensively he has problems. He tries hard. That's you know, part of the deal, but you need to know where to be. You need to do it consistently. I think I'd rather have him go back to Rockford, kill penalties, be on the power play, play in all these situations, score consistently, and then be a candidate to be brought up. And instead of the Hawks, because that's what you're talking about. If you're going to start penciling guys in, you know, Rockford IceHogs in on the NHL roster, if you're penciling them in June and July and they don't make it in September and October, well, now you're playing down a man. Because who's behind them in Rockford that's going to come up and take their place? And what free agent are you going to sign on October 15th that's going to replace, you know, that's going to fill into that roster spot? Not going to happen. So, like Morin, but he's got to go back. Olim defected. Dylan Olsen. You know, I think that a full year, and he should be ready. I would think a full year, and he'll be ready. Philip Paradis, I liked him a lot. I liked Philip Purdy in the prospect camp last summer. He does a little of everything, but he's not spectacular at anything. We saw this year in the Quebec Major Junior League that he's got a mean streak. He's got a little bit of a dirty streak. I don't know that I'm interested in those things, but the mean streak, certainly. Dirty streak, no. But, you know, we'll see. Give him a full year. David Gilbert, same thing, skipping back and ahead to David Gilbert. We just have to wait and see. Gilbert has some good talent, but he's not going to play in a first or a second line initially. He's going to have to learn, much like Evan Brophy. It's going to be a transition for him. He's going to have to play in different situations. Brandon Peary is going to be the first line center there. I'm sure whoever they bring in, they're going to bring in a center. You know, you'll have guys like Dean Domenico and Gilbert, forgetting somebody, but maybe Byron Fryce, that will be vying for those spots down the middle. So Gilbert probably have to change his game a little bit, so it'll be an adjustment for him. I don't expect him to have a great year, but this time next year we'll know what we have in him. Alec Richards needs more time. He's going to be 24 here by the end of June. He just needs more time. I don't know that he'll ever make it, but he just needs more time. We talked about Salak, Ben Smith. Ryan Stanton, obviously, people who listen to this show, Mike Peck, very high on Ryan Stanton. I could see Ryan Stanton being given the training camp reward of being the seventh defenseman on the Blackhawks, which would essentially be like saying he's the seventh defenseman ahead of John Scott as the eighth defenseman. But, I could see that. I mean, that very well could play out. But ultimately, he's going to go back to Rockford. He's a nice player. I think that he'll probably, depending on who they bring in, he'll probably be the lead candidate next year. If he continues to improve and play the way that he has, he'd probably be the lead candidate to come up when a defenseman gets injured and fill in some time. Like to see Jeff Tafe back, but I just don't think that's going to happen. Jimmy Hayes reminds me of a little bit taller Brian Noonan, so take that for what you want. And I think that'll do it there.
Who's the guy down in Rockford? Who's the guy down in Rockford right now? We talked to Stevie Ludzik, and he talked a lot about changing his game. Evan Brophy, that has changed his game the most to come up and actually make an impact.
Yeah, I remember the conversation. Yeah, he was a scorer in juniors, but when he moved up levels, the foot speed just wasn't there. He didn't process the game at the pro level, and he had to change his game. It took him a while to adjust, and he did all those things. And this year was supposed to be the year that he put it all together. I don't think anybody expected Evan Brophy to make the Blackhawks out of camp, but certainly a guy who impressed enough that you would think like. This coming year, Evan Brophy was always a long-term project. So the fact that he spent 4 years in the minors, not a surprise at all. I think the disappointment is that here we go, going into year five of his pro career, that he's not yet good enough to really eye for that fourth-line center position. I think that's the disappointment in Evan Brophy's game. Anybody who thought that Evan Brophy was going to be a second or maybe even a third line center, I think, is kidding themselves. So it's no great loss that Evan Brophy hasn't developed to this point, but he's got good size. He's 6'3". He's lanky. He's an intelligent player on the ice, at least at the AHL level. I don't trust his foot speed at the next level, but he covers a lot of ice, which is important. So he's deceptively agile. And he's smart. We talked about all those Rob Klinkhammer breakaways. At least half of them were sprung by Evan Brophy. You know, so smart player. I just, you know, at some point you got to cut guys loose. You know that, you know, they're not going to ever exceed. They're going to surpass the, you know, the AHL level, and you have to move guys out to make room for guys that you know, haven't proven that to you yet. You know, once you're convinced that a guy isn't going to make the NHL or won't develop into that kind of player, you got to move him out. You know, you got to make room for guys, give those guys opportunities. It's not that Evan Brophy doesn't want it. He just, it hasn't come together. Maybe he goes to another organization and it does, but four years is enough, I think, to say enough is enough. All right. All right, I guess we should talk about the show right now. All right, here's the deal. I think we're going to take a couple of weeks off. I've got quite a lot of things coming up here in the next few weeks. I should say that Friday night, May 27th, if, for those of you listening that are in and around the Chicagoland area, the Galway Bay Bar, which, if you know Chicago, is essentially, I'll give you major cross streets, is essentially Sheridan and Diversey. Right, Superstar?
I believe that's pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, Diversey Parkway and Sheridan, it's just west of there. But that's the general area, Galway Bay. You can Google that. If you listen to this, I'm assuming you can Google. Google that and find out. 8 o'clock, Friday night, May 27th, I'll be there. I don't know how long, but I'll be there. Superstar might be there. I know the Forklift will be there. He's efforting. Forklift will be there. Sam Fells, my buddy, will talk about his assumption in today's online blog. We'll have good fun there. Matt McClure, I think Killian, I think everybody from Second City Hockey is going, or at least they claim to be going. Forklift, myself, and I think a bunch of other people will be there. So come on out if you want to argue with us in person. You're more than welcome to it, or if you just want to get drunk. And there's a possibility that Game 7 of Tampa Bay and Boston would be that night.
Oh, that's a teaser. I don't know about hanging out with us and getting drunk is as much fun as watching that, but it should be a good time.
And if you get there early, you can play vintage Sega Genesis and Nintendo. They have that at this bar. This is the kind of bar you're going to. Don't think you're showing up at a Buffalo Wild Wings or whatever they're calling it now. Did you hear that? They changed the name of Buffalo Wild Wings, right?
No, I did not hear this.
Yeah, they got some new branding thing they're doing. But yeah, so that's coming up. And then I may wake up tomorrow and say I'm going to do a show next week, but the idea right now is that we're going to take a couple of weeks off. I need to find a different way to do this show. So that's going to be my focus, and not necessarily that we're moving from Blog Talk, but I think to just be safe, if you're listening to this, you should probably check out thethirdmanin.com every once in a while, because sooner or later I think the show will just be there. I know that half of the people that listen come straight from the Third Man In anyway, listen either when it's posted there or click over to Blog Talk from there. So I think most people go there anyway and get us there anyway. But the plan right now is to take a couple weeks off, figure out a different way to do this. Because I know that nobody maybe a few of you know this, that do shows on Blog Talk. It costs me $40 a month to do this show. And not that I'm complaining and griping over $40, but I don't want to pay $40. and I'm not gonna be one of these nerds on the internet that posts up a beg to PayPal me money because I choose to do this, and the fact that people listen, that's enough for me. But if I'm only gonna do one or two shows a month over the summer, I'm not paying $20 to do a show every 2 weeks. I'm not gonna do it. It's $40 a month, and you know, Blog Talk now has all these new restrictions on when I can and cannot do a show unless I pay them more money. So I think eventually the answer, how we solve this, unless I'm for some reason or we have more people that are doing this, you know, on our page here, unless we're doing more than one show a week, I don't see how $40 to me makes any sense. So... but that's for the future. But for the summer, we're going to find that we're going to explore different options on how to do this. And so, like I said, we could be back next week. I could line up a few guests, and we'll be back and doing this. But the thing is, the problem is with paying Blog Talk, I can't do a show in prime time, which is when I can do a show, unless I'm paying them money. I'm paying them fees. So that's going to constitute a problem here, it appears, for the next couple of weeks. So that's the story there. So check out thethirdmanin.com if we can get all technological. Well, if we just figure out what the hell we're doing.
Right now everyone who's listening to this is saying, yes, they're going to be gone for a few weeks.
Yeah. If we can figure everything out, it would be great because I think the quality of the show will be better. I'll be able to record parts of shows and then, we'll be able to paste in player interviews and all sorts of things and the backlog of our – it would just be so much easier if I could do this without Blog Talk. But it's got to sound good. It's got to be – I've got to be able to patch people in, take callers and all that kind of fun stuff. And I got to figure all that out. So – that's the story there. So don't be surprised if you don't see us for a couple weeks. But we'll be back definitely before the draft. If anything big comes up, I assume you're going to hear from us, whether I want to pay $40 or not. And I think that's about it, Superstar.
All right, buddy.
All right, thanks for joining us. Like I said, check out thethirdmanin.com. And If we got a show coming up, we'll let you know. If we're going to do it by different means, we'll let you know. And if I quit and retire altogether, I'll let you know too. but that's – I want to get the show 100, and then I'll quit. I figure that's like a big accomplishment, and then I can quit with my head held high. So
that'll be coming up on that number pretty soon here.
If we were to do a show like every week, it would be sometime in December. Or, I mean, not December, September. So, but I don't know. All right, let's get out of here. Superstar, thanks. And as always, everybody, thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you soon. Check out thethirdmanin.com. And if you want to come out and meet us again, that's May 27th, Friday, 8 o'clock, Galway Bay in Chicago. It's on Diversity. This is the time of the show where I realize that we've talked too long. It's on Diversity Parkway, just west of Sheridan. Check it out, Galway Bay, and we'll talk to you next time. Good night, everybody.